Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About.
Welcome to Let's Get Busy.
That's right. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, kidlit notables, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner, an elementary school librarian, author of the Busy Librarian blog, and your host. This is episode number 162 with Rafael Rosado and Jorge Higuera, creators of Dragons Beware, published by First Second. Rafael and Jorge's first graphic novel, Giants Beware, was a huge hit for young readers and adults alike, and its sequel comes out of the gate swinging. But how Raf and Jorge got published in the first place? Now that's a story that I'm sure is going to stick with you. If you like what you hear, I encourage you to download other episodes of Let's Get Busy on your computer or handheld device by subscribing through your preferred podcast host, like the Stitcher app or iTunes, or by visiting the Let's Get Busy homepage directly. Rating the podcast through stars or reviews on the Stitcher app or iTunes actually helps the podcast reach a greater audience, which also translates to these podcast hosting tools recommending Let's Get Busy to other listeners, which is a very good thing. I know, I've told you this before. It's a good thing. Please rate. I would love that. I would love you. I already love you. Well, who am I kidding? But go ahead and rate anyway. That'd be nice. Definitely do that if you want to help bring these chats to even more ears. Well, here we go. On that note, it's time to start episode number 162 of the podcast with Rafael Rosado and Jorge Higuera. Let's get busy. Oh, I'm sorry. You want to say it too?
Let's get busy.
Welcome to the Let's Get Busy podcast, Jorge and Raf. I'm excited to have you both here and to have technology on our side.
Yes, thanks for finally having us, Matthew.
Yeah, thank you. And it's good to be on for, you know, at last.
It is good to be on at last. I don't know if it's the storm coming through or just our technology in general, but I'm, you know, you just have to be thankful when it works. And as you were saying, Raf, just don't touch anything.
Yeah, that's it. I'm not touching any buttons.
Hands off the keyboard. Hands away from the keyboard. Yeah.
So, listeners, this is the one, the only Jorge Higuera and Rafael Rosado of Giants Beware fame, and now Dragons Beware, which is an exceptional sequel, gentlemen. I know, Jorge, we've met in person in Gaithersburg, and I got to kind of nerd out fanboy style to you when I saw you. But Raf, just so you are aware, I am a big, big fan of your work, and I'm thankful that I get to talk to you about tonight.
Oh, thank you, Matthew. It's a pleasure to be here. I really enjoy your podcast. I've listened to quite a few of them.
Well, thank you so much. I'm flattered. Hey, and I have to say, too, we've kind of been connected for a bit here. I think I mentioned this to Jorge, but I founded our state's graphic novel book award called the Black Eyed Susan Book Award for graphic novels. The State Book Award's been around for a couple years, but Giants Beware was one of our nominees. And the way we work is we have a panel of librarians, that school librarians, that we select 10 nominees, and then our students all throughout Maryland read the books and then vote on their favorite. And Giants Beware was read by thousands of kids all over Maryland. So to have a sequel come out and to have people already aware of you is exciting for me, because it means that we have not only Giants Beware in lots of our libraries, as it is in lots of libraries all across the country, but also now
there's an awareness for librarians that may or may not know so much about what to buy when it comes to graphic novels. They certainly know what's good, and they look for, you know, follow-ups such as yourself. So it's exciting, again, to have Claudette here on our shelves again for another adventure.
Fantastic. Thanks. Our fear was that we waited. There was such a long span between books that some of those kids might have aged out of it somehow.
Well, that's got to be a challenge, right, when you're doing a graphic novel that you've got, well, anything, any novel. It's not fast, but to create the illustrations for, I don't know, for your 100-and-some-page fully colored, fully illustrated, you know, story here, maybe kids can't quite understand it, which is fine. They have, you know, that love and understanding that once your book comes out, they're ready for the sequel to come out the next day. But it takes time.
Oh, yeah. A lot of blood, sweat, and tears. For both of us, really, you know.
Ah, I'm sure of it. Jorge, could you give maybe just a synopsis of what this sequel is all about?
Sure, of course. I'd be happy to. So with Dragons Beware, our main character, Claudette, who is a warrior in training or a warrior wannabe, decides to go out and get and find retrieve the most powerful sword ever created, which was made by her father, the blacksmith. And it's a sword, but there's a problem. The sword is stuck inside the belly of a dragon. The dragon once years ago got into a fight with Claudette's dad, Agustin, and Agustin lost. And he lost his hand, he lost his sword, because the dragon ate the hand and the sword and his legs, and he's in bad shape after the fight. But now the town is like under siege, and Claudette and her dad both feel like the only way to save the town is to get that sword back.
Yeah, but how? And it's a wonderful story, and I love that there's dragons, and I love that that the way that you scale this is larger and larger, and it's I don't know. I love the way that in the writing, and I know that the story is something you both work out together, but I know, Jorge, that you primarily write the story. The amount of adventure paired with humor in this story works really well. And I think specifically because the audience that you're talking to, I feel like the sweet spot for Dragons Beware, at least in my library, is that like grades 3, 4, and 5. It's just that like upper elementary and up. Anyone beyond that would love it. But that age where they can get it, where they can get the scope of this huge story is great. And so you have these points in this story where you've got some kind of scary, you know, we're going into the dragon's lair. This is going to get a little intense, but you manage so well to break it up with humor and maybe just breaking it up with Claudette's incredible confidence.
Misplaced confidence.
Misplaced confidence. There you go. She's fearless, but she's a character to love. My goodness. Is Claudette just a character that has been sort of with you for a while? Well, maybe let's stop that. Let me just ask, how did you two start working together? I don't know did you start with the story and then that came in, or have you been buddies for a while?
Raph, you want to take that?
Sure. Jorge and I mean, Jorge is one of my oldest friends, really. We met back at Ohio State Film School. What was that, back in the 80s, Jorge?
Yeah,
late 80s. Yeah,
well, you said he was your oldest friend, but I didn't realize he was that old. Just kidding.
Yeah. No. You know,
one
of my longest continuous friendships, I should say. So in film school, you know, we worked on some projects together. There was this one video in particular that he wrote and I directed, and I forced him to act in it, playing a shy writer, you know.
Throw an introvert in front of the camera.
Best actors, right?
Yeah, let him go. So then after that, you know, we ended up in different parts of the country, but, you know, we stayed in touch. We always stayed in touch, and we always wanted to find a project to collaborate on, whether it be a film or and I was always helping you out with your films, Jorge, even, you know, after school. You know,
all along?
Storyboards or, you know.
My storyboards for my short film and my credits and my all that stuff. That's true. I forgot about that.
When you were doing these films, both of you, when you were doing these films, were you was it ever at that point for a younger audience, or was Giants Beware more of the first time you looked at creating something for children?
It never started out as children.
Hmm.
I mean, it ended up that way, but I mean, Roth, you can elaborate, but Roth had the original idea, and I think as we started writing it, we just discovered it was for kids.
Oh.
Right. I mean, the character herself, like, the look of the character was always the same. I mean, it was just, Claudette was a character that I just kept sketching, like, in my sketchbooks, you know, and I just.
Really?
Yeah, it just kind of, like, popped, like, almost fully formed, except, you know, I didn't know what the story would be. The medieval setting and the fantasy setting wasn't there, but I would draw her, like, you know, wearing a leather jacket or a tutu or something. And the story itself with her, you know, hunting the giant and all that, that came later on. And I sort of worked out a skeleton of a story, and you know, Gaston was there, Marie. And then I just presented this to Jorge with some sketches, and I thought, maybe this is something we can do together, you know. And that's sort of how it came to be.
And then from there, Jorge, you just picked up writing?
Yeah, so Roth had, like, he had the ending of, this is the first book, so he had the ending.
Oh, yeah.
He had, like, the principal characters, and then I just sort of went off and fleshed out the world and how we would get to that ending and kind of built in, like, a kind of a three-act structure, and then we worked on that for a while. We do a lot of back and forth before Roth even starts drawing. So
It's a long process.
And we do a lot of like outline. No, I outline and I send it to Roth, and like we begin with simple as like book two, for example, begin as a paragraph, send it to Roth. We talk about it, becomes an outline. We talk about it, becomes a longer outline. We talk about it. Then we send it to our editor and we get more comments from him. And then we turn it into a script. Then we talk about it. And then we talk a lot.
And even as I'm drawing it, we're still going back and forth because as I sketch out the pages, I'm always trying to find places where I can add jokes or just clarify things visually or whatever. And then he'll look at the stuff and he'll respond off of that. And, you know, it's kind of a fluid process all throughout.
Well, it seems like it's a great collaboration and one that you both – yeah, really, you can tell that you are friends and that you work well together and that you're able to be able to build a story up like that from scratch and continue passing it back and forth that way, so much back and forth that I think no wonder it's hard to tell where one person ends and the other begins then when it comes to your book.
I definitely think that both really enjoy the collaboration, and we've said often is that, you know, we're the first person we try to entertain is each other, so I'm always trying to make Raphael laugh or get interested, and Raphael's trying to do the same with me.
And honestly, we're not thinking of – we're not even thinking of the audience where we're making it.
As we do it,
we're not thinking, oh, what are kids going to think? I mean, obviously, if we're putting in poop jokes or whatever, we know they'll love that.
Because we do.
You're telling us because you do. I was going to say it because I do.
But obviously, I mean, I think we're just like, doing it for ourselves and, you know, like Jorge said, trying to entertain each other. And hopefully if that works for us, it'll work for, you know, the rest of the audience.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I've heard that from so many people, and it almost seems like something that's a little, I don't know, maybe scary to admit or a little silly to admit that, no, when I write, I'm not thinking about the audience. But I think that it's because you both have developed yourselves so well as storytellers and that you know how to work in this medium. In that way, I don't know, it makes me think of like Mad Men and Don Draper and how you're giving the consumer what they want, but they don't know what they want yet. So you have to tell them, let me tell you what you like.
I mean, funny you should say that, Matthew. I mean, I'll tell you this. When we set out to make the book, I always thought that we wanted to make the kind of book that we would actually walk into the store and see and be like, wow, this book looks really cool. I want to buy this. I haven't seen something like this before, you know? So, I mean, that was definitely a part of the intent, I guess, you know? We wanted to make a book.
That, Well, no, I was just going to say, I'd like to think that you'd be able to be proud of it and not feel like, I don't know, like, do authors or illustrators have books that they're, like, a little afraid to tell their friends about because they feel like they're too kidsy or too whatever? I don't know if that's a thing, but I would want to be really proud of what I'm creating and be able to tell everyone that you're proud that you make graphic novels and that these ones that you're making now are for kids and that they're awesome.
I think we tell it. I mean, I'm very proud of the books, and I know, you know, my parents passed away between books, but I remember when the first one came out, I showed it to them. They had no idea what it was. It confused them. But I got such a kick out of sharing it with them anyway. But, you
know. Well, that's great that they were able to see, again, what your work is. I mean, I have that
not understand it, but still, you know.
No, but still have
appreciate
it.
Appreciate it, yeah.
Appreciate it, right. I mean, I think so often so I was doing some coding work for our county for some data management thing that we're doing. Anyway, but it was just this moment as I'm doing it going like, wait, I think this is actually what my dad did as I was growing up, like coding stuff, having no real idea of, as a child, what it was that he did. But I think that that's kind of the thing for all of us. I don't think our parents and their kids and things like that really get what it is we actually do, unless it's the same profession. So that's
well. In my case, it's a little different. I mean, my dad's an artist himself.
Oh, I didn't know that. Is that why? Yeah. Was that part of the reason why you got into drawing or pursuing, or maybe that was what helped the support in you following that career?
Oh, sure, it certainly helped. I mean, he never managed to do it for a living. You know, he ended up working as an engineer, but he still. I mean, he still paints and draws, and he origami is his art, his work now. That's mostly what he does. But yeah, he absolutely encouraged me all through my childhood, and he helped me make my first little animated films when I was a kid with our little Super 8 camera. Yeah.
What an amazing childhood you had to have that kind of support with somebody supporting your, I don't know, your creative life like that.
Oh, yeah. It was great. No complaints.
No.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that it turned out the way it did, that you could keep pursuing it this way. You've got, Raph, some really outstanding images, stuff that really is striking in your art. And one of the things I love just in appreciation of the design of a book is that in your covers, for both Giants Beware and in Dragons Beware, at a quick glance, you see the main characters and the title, and it's that. But you sort of have, if you look at sort of the shadows that are in the background, you hint at so much of the story to come. And I say that because when I first read the book, it was something that only when I picked it up a second time or when I picked it up later did I realize, oh, this whole time we're hinting at these other story elements to come. It wasn't just something I took time to investigate to be able to predict. And that was something that I appreciated, that quality.
Great. No, I guess we're aiming for it to work on different levels. Yeah.
Right.
So, and, you know, story points that are hinted at in book one, you know, pay off in book two. And
yeah.
And the same with book three. You know, there's things that come into play that for readers who followed, you know, the first two books, you know, there'll be some resolutions that happened there. That'll be, you know, pretty satisfactory, we hope.
Is it, how much are you able to talk about that? Did you sell it as a 3-book series?
No, we did one book at a time.
Okay.
And, but you know, but the first book did well enough that we got the second book. I mean, because, and to, you know, we'd never done this before, so I don't blame them. <one of them.
laughs> Granted, I understand First Second are really good people, but I'm not expecting them to be like, hey, you guys are awesome. Here's a 20-book deal.
It's not charity.
Incredibly supportive, and I don't think Raph and I have a single – they've been great. We've really
they're good people over there.
Working with
yeah.
them.
Oh, they're the
yeah,
best.
And they're very helpful and just really smart, creative people. But yeah, I mean, Raph and I came out of nowhere, and – so I don't think I would have given us a 3-book deal.
Yeah. But it is going to be it will resolve after a third?
Well, a lot of things will resolve. If the books continue to – there's still some questions left open in book three,
yeah.
which hopefully we'll get to explore. But it depends how well the books do. I mean,
see, I'm not asking the question the right way. I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't want it to end.
No, it's not, hear you say
it doesn't need to end at three is a really exciting thing for me. I was just trying to be polite.
Yeah, it's not a self-contained trilogy.
That's good. All right. Well, I like that. I'm sure as artists and wanting to maintain sort of the integrity of the story and not be too presumptuous, you're right that you're writing it so that it could end here, but there are strings left untied that give opportunity for another story.
That's a good way to put it. Like, we try to wrap it up, but not wrap it up too tightly.
Yeah. Oh, so first of all, as you're saying too, they've done so well with all of their books coming out. And I know a lot of the people at First Second now, having done the podcast for a bit and gotten to meet a lot of their people that run the ship over there, but also by getting to talk to people like you who are published through them. And they've got a really good thing going, and I think they have a really good handle on what is a great story and is hitting the right audience. I think that there are a lot of publishers right now of comics and graphic novels that don't quite know the right way to market a book for the targeted audience. I'm not saying that the right way. Here's how I'm trying to say it. I've been to Small Press Expo a lot. SPX is a wonderful place to meet people publishing comics. Mm-hmm. But sometimes there are comics that are written in such a way that there are elements that will keep them out of schools or keep them out of schools for a certain reason, just because, I don't know, not everything can go into schools, unfortunately. But First Second, I feel like, is doing such a good job of making sure that the books that are coming out are appropriate for the age that it feels like the story is intended for. I don't know.
Yeah.
And
That makes sense.
I feel like I'm confident with their stuff coming out that I can put it in my library, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think they're very aware.
But also, to their credit, though, Ruff, would you add that they've never asked us to write in that way? We just write what we have in mind, and it just ends up there. It ends up as something that you could have in a library, I suppose, at a school.
Well, then there too is a testament that they're investing in people that they know have a good handle on their story and on their audience.
Well, I think they could tell from our pitch that it would fit a particular demographic that they were trying to aim for anyway with some of the other books, you know?
All right.
So, they've been fantastic. I mean, Mark Siegel's like a great champion of the work. You know, we're very fortunate.
When did you decide, or how did you sell the book? How much was finished of Giants Beware, and why First Second? What brought you to them?
Jorge, you want to take that, and then I'll chime
sure. Okay, so the way that remember we didn't know what we were doing. We just knew this way as hell.
So you showed up at the Flatiron Building.
Well, no, actually even worse than that. So I would not recommend the way we did it, although it worked out for us because we did a lot of groundwork before. So Ruff and I spent about 6 months just working on it, and we'd done the script. Ruff had roughed out about 58 pages or so, and Comic-Con San Diego 2008 was coming up, or 2007. I can't remember which year it was. Maybe it was 2007 or 2008. And it was coming up, and Ruff and I were both like, you know, we don't have any connections to the business. Let's do it. So Ruff had come up with, out of all the people there, he had targeted like seven or so companies that did things for kids that maybe had, you know, Ruff draws in kind of a French style. So we were hoping for a company that had books that looked a little bit like that.
Okay.
And, you know, so we're both kind of introverted. But my job was to make the first introduction, and then Ruff would continue. So we went to San Diego. I was living in L.A., and I had to do the 30-second, my name is Jorge Aguirre, this is Rafael Rosado, I work in film, and he works at TV, and we did this topic, which is about it. I think it's really cool. Would you take a look? This is my friend Ruff. And then Ruff would come
and find me. So his job was to convince them right away that we weren't total lunatics and we
you had to almost waste their time. You had to legitimize them.
I had the credibility part of the pitch, and then Ruff had the this is what the story is about part of the pitch.
Right.
So it was, and you know, I've of the seven companies we targeted, I think three took the pitch and two were interested in it, including First Second, who was always First Second was always our favorite.
Right, that was always at the top of the list, and that was the first one we went to. I'm like, well, let's just start at the top and work our way down, you know?
So if I go backwards from here, then I feel like the thing you're not saying, but that is implied, is that you also must have done your research. You are reading a lot of graphic novels. You're seeing what would be the best fit for the story that you're writing, who is publishing the works that feel like Claudette would have a home with. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
a lot of research went into it before we, I mean, we, a lot of work too, because Raph was drawing for months and I had written the script for months. I mean, there's a lot of sweat. We decided we would self-publish if we could not sell it.
Oh, really?
Well, we had a whole pitch package together, you know, like a bound document with the artwork and the outlines for
snazzy,
different books. I think just that, having that just fairly professional presentation, set us apart a little bit, I guess. I don't know.
I would imagine.
Because that was the issue, right? Because strategically, when you think about it, I'm sure all these companies get approached by lots and lots of people, and I'm sure lots of them are very talented people too.
Especially at a con, especially because the access to people like that is right there.
So we knew there were lots of strikes against us. But the main hurdle we figured was looking like we could pull it off, looking like we were professional, that we knew deadlines, that we had a good story, and that we could do it.
And you did. Well done, gentlemen. Thanks. For a couple of introverts, you did all right.
Thank you.
Not bad. I can't stress
enough how honored we feel to be published by First Second, because they published some of the best cartoonists in the world. You know?
They're brilliant work. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, not to sound too corny, but it's like a dream come true. I mean, it's really.
Oh yeah.
Really admire them.
I don't know. I think that doesn't sound corny at all. I mean, I think anyone that listens to this podcast, and it's kind of a mixed bag that listens, but anyone that's interested in writing for children, I'm sure they have a publisher in mind that as they are loving certain picture books or certain middle grade or certain graphic novels, that as they keep loving these books and they keep looking on the back at the publisher imprint, that it you tend to see the same sort of people over and over. That end up aligning with what you're interested in, and you end up sort of knowing a publisher for the way that they represent certain people, or certain works, I should say, certain bodies of work. And so I think it makes perfect sense that you would have someone in mind, but even better that they likewise would see you both as a part of their family, that your work fits. And it does. I think also if I go back to that Black Eyed Susan Award with our book award that I was saying, we end up over and over getting nominating titles from First Second just because they are consistent in their quality and the variety of works that they publish. I mean, all of you that are in that house and that imprint, I don't know why I keep calling it an imprint, but thinking of Dave Roman and thinking of Ben Hatke and thinking of anyone else doing work through First Second, it all looks so different and the stories are so varied as they should be, but they still have a consistent feel and energy that I think First Second knows what people to have around. I don't know what I'm saying. I'm just blubbering now. Look at me being a fan of them now. My word.
They have good taste.
We're saying First Second.
That's
what we want to say. Is we want to say they have good taste, but it sounds kind of arrogant, right?
Of course.
Isn't it weird to say that? I was, for you to say. Yeah, okay.
I was aware of that as I was saying.
Let me say it for you. They have good taste. Hey, and speaking of First Second helping to sort of coordinate things, this is something I don't want to look over because I really like that your names have been popping up a bit. First though, for sort of the blog tour, I guess you would call it, for Dragons Beware, the video blog tour, that was put together of these different videos. What's your favorite thing about Claudette? I got to share on Busy Librarian, how would you fight a dragon? To see faces of children talking about elements not even directly of your story, but just on the theme of your story was so fun. That felt like another move that just felt like you get kids and you get your audience and you're involving them in the story. And that authentically builds excitement.
Well, thanks. We have to give some credit to Ross' wife, Darlene, for the videos, yeah. And my wife, Carla, for the videos.
Yeah, but she's an editor. Most of them.
Yeah. And we were going to do a regular book trailer like we did for the book one.
Yeah.
But
as a matter of fact, I wanted to do an even more elaborate trailer than book one. I was actually going to animate, like, do full animation on some of the stuff. And,
whoa.
But then I realized, well, yeah. There's no way. There's no way I could do it. And, you know. So maybe
I didn't want him to do it because I'd rather have Raph drawing book three than because Raph is a perfectionist. So I know that he's going to work on the trailer. It's going to be animated. That book three would be done like in 5 years because he would just be focused on the trailer. So I told Raph that I would do it
instead of four. Do it. And
then, but Darlene, who is Raphael's wife, said, "Well, you know, she made some suggestion about like doing documentary style videos or trailers or having kids talk about it."
Yeah.
And I wrote a script and I shot some of it here in New Jersey. And then Raph and his wife shot a lot of footage in Columbus.
It
just it exploded into five videos. It was going to be like one short one, but I'm really happy with how they turned out. My wife is a documentary editor and she edited the first one. And then I used that as kind of my template. I edited the other four and I used that as kind of my template. So our wives. That's a lot.
And our kids are in the first one.
Yeah. Your kids are.
Yeah. So.
But to have you and your wives both be in film and editing and I mean, you clearly are sticking with birds of a feather. It's a good thing.
It's a village, man.
And I think it also helps that they kind of know your language. They know what you're working on. They know all that. Oh, and your kids are in it, which is great that we get to see a glimpse of those people that get to probably see your stories, get to test out your stories on before anybody else gets to read them.
Yeah.
In some way, right? Do you pitch ideas? Do you talk? Are they invested or are you one that kind of bring the story when it's more finalized to them?
I'll wait till it's a little more finalized myself.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'll run some jokes past them, you know.
There you go.
Mostly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I that's another fun thing to have kids around that age and they do grow up fast, but to have them around that age that you can be sharing the stories with them. The kids are super loving, so I guess they would always love what you do. But to be able to kind of test it with them. Yours are not loving?
My kids are brutal, like my wife, they're brutally honest. But I will say that my son was reading Giants Beware in the car recently because he just found it. And I could hear him, as I was driving, I could hear him giggling.
Oh, awesome. Yay.
And I love that. Like, it was one of those moments where you stop and you're like, okay, make sure you remember this when you're 80.
Yeah.
And, you know, knock on wood, if I live that long, I'll remember.
Yeah, take a mental picture of it, as they say.
Yes.
Well, I also love the other thing that Gina, for a second, invited me to be a part of, which I really appreciated, was the 5 questions with kids comics authors that you did to celebrate Children's Book Week.
Mm-hmm. That was great. That was fun.
Interviewing, my word, almost every name I could think of in kids'
that
comics.
That was incredible.
Yeah. It was unbelievable. And the blog tour was it? Was it every day in May? It was 30 or something.
Yeah. That was so cool. That was so cool. I mean, some of them we've met in person, but
I was going to ask.
You know.
Some of these people, too, it's a great excuse to just ask the questions that you've been wanting to get to know about
exactly,
your colleagues.
Exactly. That was exactly it, you know, and mm-hmm. That was a great privilege to be able to do that.
Oh, yeah. Anyone in particular that you, you don't have to share this if you don't want to, but was there anyone on the list that was kind of your dream person to talk to that you didn't know ahead of time?
Well, Raph has met Gene, Gene Luen Yang, and I hadn't met him yet, and he said something. Because, you know, he had a day job, too, and he worked on these comics. And I've always been, as of Raph, we've always been fascinated about that balance between day job and working. And he had this really interesting comment about how his day job uses a different energy bucket than his creativity. Huh. And I found that really interesting. I mean, because I write for the day, you know, for my day job, and I write for my fun, it's sort of the same energy bucket.
Right.
But I always find any chance we get to talk to Gene, I find really interesting, actually. I always learn something.
Oh, yeah. All right. And he's a super nice guy, too.
He's a super nice guy, yeah. Jorge, did you meet him at Gaithersburg? Was that the first time you
I did. That was It was such a pleasure to meet him in person. I mean, yeah. That's when I met him.
Yeah.
He's very, very tall. And I met Gaithersburg was so much fun. I met so many people that I'd heard of or read, and I just never met them in person.
He's tall and full of kindness, which means he, per square inch, has more kindness than many of us.
That's true.
But he's a good guy. Yeah, Gaithersburg, they got a cool thing going on at Gaithersburg. They bring a lot of great people. And then to have in the summer that we have, or I guess in the fall, that we have the National Book Festival too. They've been attracting more and more graphic novelists and many other super talented kid lit people and all types. But yeah, it's a lot of fun to be able to just walk around Gaithersburg, a small town, and get to brush shoulders with so many cool people.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Raphael, you'll have to come.
No, yeah, it sounds awesome. And Jorge was giving me reports as he was, you know, today, and I was like, oh, man, I wish I could be there. Yeah.
It was nice. I got to hang out with Jorge while my kid played on the playground. What could be better?
I mean, that's pretty cool, right? I mean, it was you, me, and Dave Roman just hanging out in a playground.
Just hanging out in a playground. I mean,
that was just so, just such a nice moment. I mean,
it was. Great. It was really, I mean, it's just those kind of moments that are just, they're just really great. They're just so natural. It's great.
So you guys were watching Dave play on the swing?
We were watching Dave swing on the...
he's on the teeter-totter.
Yeah, yeah.
Dave, what a great guy. Yeah, but to be able to just sit with people like you and just talk comics or talk kid-lit stuff. I mean, it was, those kind of moments are really wonderful. It's great to be able to be around company because, well, just like you working sort of alone in your studios all the time with your writing or Jorge with you working on the, you know, the animated animated series that you're working on and Raph for you as well, to be able to get out in front of people and get to talk and meet people. It's nice to be out in public with real people.
It's always nice to see other fellow humans, and then the nice humans is even better.
That's a good way to put it, and fellow humans.
It's not only that, but I mean, we come from a different world. You know, the book publishing and the children's book world is very different than what we're used to, and it's cool to get to meet so many cool, interesting artists and writers and I mean, we work with really nice, great people in the animation world, but there's not a lot of intersect, you know?
No, hey, Raph, actually, it makes me think, this question had come up in my mind earlier, since Giants Beware came out, have either of you had the opportunity to do school visits? Because that would be a completely different world thing from working in animation.
Yeah.
And also something that perhaps is maybe potentially challenging for introverts, although it is children. Children are very easy to love and be loved by.
Yeah, no, I've done quite a few actually since Giants Beware came out, mostly in Ohio, you know.
Okay,
And I did a week in north of Austin, Texas, because we were nominated for the Blue Bonnet.
Yeah.
Is nominated the right word? I don't know.
Blue Bonnet. Is Blue Bonnet the
Texas Library Association.
Blue Bonnet,
because
it's Blue Bonnet and it's Maverick, and one of them is the like the best of list, and one of them is the voting on award. I can't remember.
Yeah, that's the Blue Bonnet. Yeah.
But Blue Bonnet and Maverick, but in honor, that in Texas is a massive state with lots and lots of readers.
Oh yeah,
that's a big deal.
Well, and again, because we're not familiar with the world, you know, when they told us, you're in the Blue Bonnet list, I'm like, oh, that's cool. But then the more we found out about it, we're like, man, this is like a really big deal. You know,
it is.
For our first book, you know, to be in
the getting list. On a book list, I think, in general, is a really big deal. Because, again, like with our Black Art Season Award, it means that not just that that a panel thinks your book is great, which is great to get a great book review in SLJ or in something like that, but also that on a book list like that, it means that it's going to be featured on a shelf and kids will be reading it and it'll be purchased as a first purchase for different collections in libraries. This is something that's sort of a flag saying, hey, we all stand behind this book. So it's a good thing. It's no small feat. And yes, for your first book, quite a number of accolades.
No, and it's great to have the support of librarians like you all over the country for for both books, you know. It's
yeah, we just like being fans. I mean, you write good stuff, then we love it, and the kids love it, and that just makes us love you guys more. So, yeah, it's good. We're in a good place, all of us right here.
Aw, thanks.
All right, group hug.
Yeah.
All right, okay, before I let you go, one more question. I'm assembling an all-star kid-lit Dream Team kickball tournament. I'm sure you've got kickball out there in Ohio. And I want to know what one person alive or past from the kid-lit world you'd want on your team and why. Jorge, why don't we start with you?
You know, going back to what we were talking about earlier today, I think our team will need someone tall, Raf. So I'm going to go with Gene.
Oh, okay.
Because he can catch the fly balls or whatever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, interesting. So are we talking about physical prowess or like body of work?
I don't know. I love that Jorge went straight for the literal interpretation, yeah, exactly. Which is totally fine. Totally acceptable. That's why I asked the question.
Well, I'm a pragmatist.
I thought a lot about the question, and then my initial pick was Jeff Smith, just because, you know, he's a friend, and Bone is as good as it gets, you know, as far as,
oh yeah,
you know, graphic novel epics go, and he's an incredible storyteller. But then I started thinking, like, wait a minute, if we're reaching farther back, I started thinking of somebody whose career goes far and wide, and so I thought of Jules Pfeiffer, you know.
Oh yes.
Because
Jules Pfeiffer,
I mean, talk about going way back. He used to work for Will Eisner on The Spirit. That's how far back he goes. You know, when he was, I don't know, he was like a teenager or something.
I didn't make that connection.
Yeah, really. Yeah. And then moving on to the stuff he did for The Village Voice, and he did some stuff, I think it was back in the 50s and 60s, that were like proto graphic novel type of books. And then onto the children's, the picture books, obviously, which are tremendous. I
mean, right.
And then he just last year published his first, you know, honest to goodness graphic novel, I guess.
His memoir, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
so.
Well, he's great. I don't know. I haven't met Jules, but I've met Jeff. And Jeff is a big, powerful guy, too. So I think,
yeah.
I think you all are thinking the right things, both for body of work and the level of respect you have for them, but also
as far as physical power, that pig Jeff, of course, because he's a pretty fit guy, you know. But again, with Jules, we might be able to work some, you know, I don't know, some strategy, you know.
I love it all. He seems like a wild card. I like that.
Yeah, yeah. I just think, that's a kind of career I would love to have, where it spans decades and you get to do all kinds of different works. I mean, he wrote, he's written plays and screenplays, and I mean, you know,
it's everything. Whatever he wants to do, he just kind of does it and ends up doing well.
It's great. Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, it was a pleasure talking to you both. Congratulations again about Dragons Beware coming
Thank
out,
you.
And also for the future of Claudette and of the gang. I love your work, and you are both exceptional, kind gentlemen, and I look forward to everything the future has in store for you.
All right.
Thanks
a
lot, man.
Hope I get to meet you in person in November.
Like what you hear? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Leave a comment on the blog at lgbpodcast.blogspot.com or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favorite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.